You want to do some podcasting, Jay?
Oh my God, I thought you would never ask.
King Arthur loved cuckolds. The dude was bigger than a giant.
Solid. That's a thing I need to know.
Yeah.
I am the god of this forest, and I will flex.
And welcome to My Medieval Mayhem, the podcast where we discuss medieval literature, history, and medievalism. I'm Marcel Losada, resident medieval scholar, and this is Jan Losada, resident lover of stories and medieval stuff in general.
Oh, yes, though I'm surprised you dropped my hyphenated name. Full name is Jan Michael Losada, but you can call me Jan for short if you know me. And I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to take a dive right back into the Holy Grail. It hasn't even been mentioned yet. I'd like to point that out.
That's right. Yeah, we're back on to Percival. Every 2 weeks, we're going to bring you a medieval topic or text to discuss. This is part the third, believe it or not. We've been hammering away at this text. Let's see, Jan, do you want to try a crack? A lot of stuff happened last time, so I can help fill in some gaps. But you know what? You can also just go listen to the episode, which is even better. Yeah.
I mean, I'll try to do it in a sentence.
One sentence. That's all you get. Yeah. Punctuation varies.
The boy who became a knight found a wife after defeating yet another knight. And then we ended with easily one of my favorite tropes, the meanwhile, and in a castle far, far away, with no doubt lightning bolts striking in the background, evil plans are afoot.
Yeah, exactly. So we have some adversaries to our young protagonists, right? So do you remember their names?
Oh,
one of them
Lord,
says, yeah.
Lord, no. oh, man. You gun to my head, I couldn't. Yeah.
Yeah. Clamadius was one of them.
I should have remembered him.
Yeah. Clamato goes great in a Bloody Mary.
Sure. Then, I mean, chlamydia comes to mind,
ooh,
too.
Ooh, that's just pretty good.
He's the knight who maybe fucked around and found out, you know?
If you like Bloody Marys enough, there probably is a positive correlation to, you know, chlamydia.
I'll look at that paperwork. Oh,
yeah. It's good. And then there was Angiron.
Yeah, okay.
That I feel like I harped on too much with Angiron. But yep. It does sound like a Transformer, so I'm still hanging on to that. And it sounds cool.
And he was the one that died?
Angiron, I think he's still alive. I think they're both still up. Yeah. If we don't hear from him for a while, we can just assume he died. Yeah. So I, again, go listen to the previous episode for
details and stories about these. But
I remember he shows up. So I think we're going to hear from him.
Okay.
Just FY. Yeah. We're going to hear from both of them. And so let's kick it off now. So Clamadius sent 20 of his knights before the castle gate, carrying all kinds of pennons and banners unfurled in the wind. Remember what pennons are, real quick?
Pennons were fancy. Gosh, I feel like I'm in school and I'm being tested, mainly because of the educational material involved. They're like little flags that attach to the horse. Was that it?
So they're attached not to the horse, but to the lance.
Okay. Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, they would serve as identifiers in battle, that kind of stuff.
Or so you didn't go hack rank. Your own dude. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. That's the most likely, you know, the heraldry and, you know, that kind of stuff. Right. And when the men of the castle saw them, they rashly flung open the gates according to the boy's wishes. And with everybody watching, he rode out to do combat with the knights.
Wait, it's a 1v20?
Yep.
So he went from level 1 to level 20. That I'm great. At least we're opening with some combat, something. Let's get into it.
Oh, yeah. I left you on a cliffhanger for a reason.
Oh, yeah. This is an exciting way to start this adventure.
Bold and strong and confident, he met them all together, and no one who felt his onslaught thought him an apprentice in the art of arms.
Okay, cool. So he's coming in. He's looking sturdy and strong from training on pillows, as I remember.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, great, great. They probably don't know about his secret javelins he has. He can ice someone real quick with the javelin.
Yeah, he's like Bullseye, dude. This guy's amazing. he showed great skill that day. He gutted many with his lance. Here, pierced their chest, and there, their breasts. Here, broke an arm, and there, a collar. This one he killed, and that one he wounded. This one unhorsed, and that one seized, and gave the captives and the horses to those who had need of them.
Wow. So he just montage slaughtered 20 knights. He just like single paneled, like, oh, sick. That's actually a pretty sick description from a medieval text. I'd be pleased with that sentence today, you know? So that's cool. Hey.
But suddenly they caught sight of the great battalion who had come up through the valley. 400 armed knights and 1,000 foot soldiers. The men of the castle drew up close to the open gate, while the besiegers beheld the loss they had suffered of their wounded and dead companions and came charging towards the gate in impetuous disarray.
Tell me, he's going to go out and one man this whole army. Holy crap. I'm suddenly rooting for him. Like, I have not liked this kid up until right now. Oh, man. And nothing seemed to come hard for him. So I'm sure that'd be an easy task, killing 400 knights and 1,000 ground troops.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, foot soldiers, right? The defenders were all arranged in serried ranks. Serried means tightly packed together.
Okay.
At their gate and received them boldly. But they were few in numbers and weak, while their attackers were boosted by the foot soldiers who followed them, until they could withstand them no longer and fell back into the castle. Above the gate were archers shooting into the great crowd, and press who were burning and raging to burst into the castle, until finally, violently, one band broke their way in. But the men above sent a portcullis crashing onto those below, killing and crushing all it caught as it fell.
Okay, a portcullis. I've heard through my many nerddoms, I've heard this term. What is a portcullis?
Portcullis is a strong or heavy iron gate that can be raised or let down at the entrance of a castle.
Okay, sure. Love it. That's a pretty sick description. So they waited until the opposing force broke through the doors, and then they let this fucker down, a big iron gate thing, and it crushed a bunch of dudes. Love it.
100%. Sick. Yeah. And portcullises were around for a long time. You know, I mean, it's a pretty basic concept. It's literally a heavy gate that's operated by a pulley system, right? Usually a couple of different pulleys, so that you can, you know, very easily pull this heavy ass thing up or down. You know, the weight for these things could be pretty devastating, you know, to where, and they were usually spiked for this exact reason. You know, you could try to catch somebody with it, but when you slammed him down, it also was very difficult to get through, right?
Yeah, sure.
Clamadius could not have seen a more grievous sight. The falling gate had killed huge numbers of his men and locked him out. There was nothing for it but to go and rest. To continue such a furious assault would be a waste of effort now.
I kind of disagree, Clamadius. Just that's your weakness. Oh, shit, a gate. Oh, no, I guess we have to, we got to call it, man. I didn't see that gate coming. Like, what are you talking about? Isn't this a part of your job? Aren't you, like, I'm almost positive Nightstorm Castles, this can't be new to you.
But his mentor who counseled him said, "Sir, it's not to be wondered at if misfortune befalls a worthy man. Good and ill befall everyone according to God's will and pleasure. The long and short of it is, you've lost. But every saint has his feast day," which is an interesting expression, right? Like, I think it's saying, you know, like, because saints get killed, right? Like, that's a whole, they have to be martyred, right?
Sure, sure.
You know, they get killed for the beliefs, or they die for, you know, something like that in their line of duty. And so the fact that they have a feast day means like they have a celebration. They win every now and again, right?
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. The tempest has fallen on you. Your men are wounded, and the men of the castle have won, but they'll lose yet. Be sure of that. Tear out both of my eyes if they hold out for 3 more days.
Whoa, getting a little. Oh boy.
Really specific.
Yeah, coming in strong there, but sure, I guess.
Yeah. The castle and the keep will be yours. They'll put themselves entirely at your mercy. If you can stay here just today and tomorrow, that's all. The castle will fall into your hands. Even the girl who's refused you for so long will beg you in God's name to take her.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, their currency.
Yeah, amen. I mean, I hope he gets Mario'd. I hope he finds out at the end the princess he's looking for is not in this castle and he has to go to the next one. I hope the story just shifts over to Clamadius's journey to find his ex-betrothed.
Then those who had brought tents and pavilions began to pitch them, while the others made lodges and shelters as best they could. Pavilions, here's an interesting thing. You got me thinking the last time, because we brought up pavilions, right? And sure. I think in episode one. And pavilions, we had discussed, you know, it could look something like the Great British Bake Off, right? So
a
I went
big
to
tent. Yeah. Or yep, a series of tents. Yeah.
100%. Yeah. And this one's from Oxford Reference, which is referencing the different definitions in the OED. And so here's one of them. It says a detached ornamental building, such as a gazebo. Okay. Now picture a gazebo. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. I'm channeling every wedding photo I've ever seen. Yep. Sure.
Or a summer house.
Okay.
Those seem like two
wildly different things. Right?
Yeah.
A summer house now? Because that's just a house. That's just a house in a nice area. Okay. So,
and then it goes on, often but not always dependent on a larger or principal building.
Okay. So
there are 3 more definitions.
Oh, good. Yeah.
It could be a temporary building,
mm-hmm.
a covering or canopy. So a tent-like structure such as a canopied litter or the velarium over an amphitheater.
Okay.
Yeah. So the velarium, you know, is just like a awning kind of thing.
Okay, great, great.
Yeah, and and then small detached building in a park often associated with relaxation and pleasure, containing a salon for refreshments and 2 chambers, one for storage of provisions and the other a lavatory.
Okay. So they're setting up some pretty elaborate structures, though it sounds like, because we established this was a town in the, or like the castle was behind the town that he had went through at the beginning of the last episode. So maybe they're making makeshift structures. Were there 2 chapels in this son of a bitch? I thought
that's inside the castle. This is outside. Oh. This is the army that's outside.
Okay.
It says those who had brought tents and pavilions began to pitch them while the others made lodges and shelters.
Which is broad as shit. Sure. They're still camping down for the night.
I think so. It's just interesting that there's 4 different ways to say, you know, makeshift structures.
Right.
And I don't know what the different, you know, when would somebody be like, that's not a shelter, that's a tent. You know, like,
yeah, for sure.
That's not a lodge, that's a pavilion, you idiot. You know, like, you know.
Bro, I would never get married here. This is not a gazebo.
That's funny. Yeah. Yeah. So meanwhile, the men of the castle disarmed the knights they had captured. Remember, he captured some knights.
Right? Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, as I imagine, as the gate fell, there were knights on the inside that were like, oh no.
Sure. And then, yeah. And so here's my question to you. How do you think these knights were treated?
I mean,
be treated. Yeah. Or, you know, what would a medieval text suggest that we do to our captured?
I'm going to go with the fact that they've been really harping on how fairness and the fact that a couple of his mentors told him to treat knights with good regard, even though he's killed quite a few at this point. They're going to be well, considering he got to go into a bunch of different places and eat just free. I'm gonna say they're gonna have a fine time of it. Norwegian prison.
Good. Yeah. Now, juxtapose that. How do you think prisoners were actually treated?
Probably pretty poorly.
I don't know. I think it really depends what the relation of those people were to you and the nature of the conflict that you were having.
I imagine money played a pretty large role, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's and probably religion. And class, anyway.
Sure.
But they did not lock them in dungeons or irons, provided that they promised as loyal knights to stay in captivity honorably and to do their captors no harm.
You have to pinky swear, okay? I know I cut off your arm. I'm sorry about that one. But the rest of you, pinky swear, you'll just stay in prison, okay? Okay.
Okay. Okay. Exactly. Right. Such was their imprisonment. Oh yeah. Very imprisoned. Now that very day, a mighty wind had driven a vessel across the sea with a great cargo of wheat and other supplies on board. By God's will, it arrived safe and sound before the castle. As soon as they caught sight of it, the men of the castle sent down to inquire who they were and what they wanted. Down they came from the castle to the ship and asked them what people they were, where they had come from, and where they were going.
Okay, I've got so many questions about the geography of all of this.
I cannot answer this at all, but go for it. Yep.
So there is a force of, let's say, 1,300 now after the losses, whatever.
Sure.
Outside the gates of a castle that has a full town inside of it. Two chapels.
Yep.
Now there's also ocean access. I would figure that that would immediately have been seized by the army outside.
Yeah, it came from the sea. So
yeah, but weren't they starving? Weren't they?
Yeah, they're starving.
Why didn't they just fuck off into the sea? Is that I'm very confused by where we are in this story.
Yeah, yeah. Because then they wouldn't be there to defend the castle, maybe? I don't know. Send somebody to go get food? Yeah, that sounds logical. Maybe they burned all their boats? I don't know. Yeah. Let's find out.
Yeah, let's find out. Great.
And they replied, "We're merchants carrying provisions to sell, bread and wine and salted bacon." Okay.
Good. Yes. Yeah. Great.
"And additionally, we have plenty of cattle and pigs to slaughter if need be."
Oh, even better. Oh, my God. Great supply drop. Shit.
"The men of the castle cried, 'God be praised for giving the wind the power that brought you drifting here. You're very welcome. Start unloading. You can sell the lot as dear as you dare. Come quickly now and take your payment. There'll be plenty to receive and count. We'll give you bars of gold and silver for your wheat, and for the wine and meat, you'll have enough riches to fill a cart. More if need be.'"
Well, I mean, I like how the boy is now just giving away the castle's finances, but...
Well, that's the men of the castle. It's not just the boy, but yeah. Sure. "The buyers and sellers did a fine job as they set about unloading the ship and sending all the goods ahead to fortify the people in the castle. When they saw them coming," that's great writing, "coming carrying the provisions, you can imagine how they rejoiced. And with all possible speed, they gave orders for dinner to be prepared." That's the people in the castle. Clamadius, loitering outside. This is our big baddie.
Loitering. That's a hell of a description.
Yeah, he's just fucking about.
He's committing a misdemeanor out there. He's not. Yeah. It's not full of felony territory with that army, but
he's sipping a 40 outside the 7-Eleven. Leave him alone. Could now stay as long as he liked, For in the castle, they had cattle and pigs and salted meat in abundance and enough wheat to last till the next harvest.
Wow. So they're just stocked up. They're
I want to see the size of this boat.
Boat. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I want to see a lot of stuff around this castle.
What does the cow do during this voyage?
I imagine it's like a Noah's Ark situation where they've got like food for it.
Yeah, sure. But, you know, how long do you think you could keep a cow in a boat? It's not moving. That thing's made to move, dude. Like, it's going to be very angry.
Sure. I imagine. I rarely meet cows, but from my understanding, they're pretty chill creatures, right? I mean, they'd probably be fine.
Yeah, I guess. Maybe. I don't know. You know? Well, which makes me think, what animals are not cool to keep on? You know, what about the bull?
Yeah, sure. That's probably a problem. probably a thing that needs a lot of time and attention.
Right. Anyway, castle cooks were not idle, and boys lit the kitchen fires to cook the dinner. Now the young knight could sport with his love at his ease. She embraced him, and he kissed her, and they delighted in each other's company. The hall was far from silent now. Interesting stacking of lines. It rang with rejoicing and a mighty din. The dinner made everyone rejoice. They had longed for it so much, and the cooks labored with all their might until finally they said they could sit down to dine, and how they needed that dinner.
Yep. Cool. They're getting a long rest. Everyone's getting their HP back. You get your spells back. Shit.
Yeah. When they had eaten, they rose from the tables. Now, here's a semicolon where we're going to switch to Clamadius, okay? So, but Clamadius and his men were filled with anguish, for the news had now reached them of the castle's provisions. They all said they should leave, for there was no way now of starving out the castle. And remember, we had talked about besieging it, right?
Yes, and this very castle was just besieged.
Yeah, and it says they had besieged it for nothing. Mm. Clamadius was furious, and without anyone's advice or counsel, he sent a message to the castle telling the Red Knight, our hero here, that until noon the next day, he could come and meet him alone in the plain to do battle with him if he dared. When the girl heard this, she was filled with grief and anger. So somehow this message has been like,
seasoned. They got burnt.
Yep, exactly. I was just thinking Game of Thrones, where the crows were teleporting towards the end. You know?
Yep. Yeah. A bird is basically an email.
Right.
It goes that fast. It's that reliable.
Yeah. First season takes like 5 months.
Yep.
By the sixth season, dude, it's right there.
It's
like a text message. Yeah. Yep. But her young love returned word that, come what may, Clamadius would have battle, since that was what he wanted. So he's not backing down, right? At that, the girl's distress grew deeper still. But I think no amount of tears from her would ever have made him stay. All the women and all the men implored him not to go and fight one whom no knight had ever withstood in battle before. But the boy said, "It's best you say no more, my lords, for no man in the world could hold me back from this." And I'm going to make him sound a little less like an idiot, because this guy's starting to be a badass, right?
He's not got 22 knights under his belt. He's well on his way to legendary status.
Well, he's starting to believe. Thus he stopped their tongues, for they dared say nothing more. Instead, they went to their beds and rested until the sun rose next morning. They were still most distressed for their lord, but no matter how much they implored him, they could not change his mind. And his love, too, had begged him that night not to go to battle, but stay there in peace, for they had nothing to fear any longer from Clamadius and his men. But all this entreaty was worthless, which was strange and remarkable indeed, for her coaxing words to him were as sweet as could be. And with each word, she kissed him so softly and so gently that she slid love's key into the lock of his heart. Yet still, she found no way of dissuading him from going to battle. Instead, he called for his arms, and those he commanded brought them to him with all speed. But there was the greatest sorrow as the boy was armed. All the men and women were heavy-hearted. He commended them all to the King of Kings and mounted his swarthy horse, which had been brought to him. And then in a moment, he was gone.
I don't understand why they're all being so, like, remorsed about this. I mean, he's literally never failed at anything. This guy is just perfect. He's going to ice this Clamadius no problem.
You're calling it now, man, like Babe Ruth. All right, let's see.
Oh, I'm pointing at the stands. Oh, yeah.
As he departed, he left them grieving bitterly. When Clamadius saw his enemy coming, he had such wild thoughts in his head that he imagined he would empty the knight's saddle in no time. The plain was beautiful and smooth, and no one was there save the two of them. For Clamadius had dismissed his men and sent them all away. Each had his lance fixed in its rest before the saddle bow. Before I get to the next line, this one's kind of cool. There's a video I'm going to post online about lance and rest. But essentially, there was this part of armor that would come out of the breast, right? I'm showing you, Jan, just like pointing to me, right?
I got it.
It comes at like a 45-degree angle. And what it is kind of like, think of a bracket to hold up a shelf, right?
Okay, sure.
And they would, when they're tucking their lance in back here, right? They can rest it on this spot. And so the shaft is running behind my arm, but I could rest it on this lance rest.
Okay, so
and all I'd have to do is move it a little bit, but it would be really secured, right?
Sure. Yeah. So it's like going under your armpit, across a hanger coming off of your chest, and then you're holding it with your arm with like your elbow over it.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. And so that is a, you know, it kind of also tells us that that kind of
that advance. Knights were lazy. That knights were real lazy. Yep.
Exactly. That's exactly what I wanted to highlight. Yep. Well, let's see here. Distressed. Okay, perfect. And they charged full tilt, and the knights were strong, filled with mortal hatred, and they struck each other so hard that the wood of their shields split and their lances smashed, and they brought each other down.
Okay. Okay. Okay, this is the first time the boy's actually been up against an adversary that can even, like, scratch him. All right? So maybe he's finally met another level, you know, 30 or 20 player. Yeah, okay. Also, weird, I had envisioned the shields made of metal, but wood. Yeah,
You know, it's probably reinforced with metal. But because it says the wood of their shield split.
Yeah, sure, sure.
So it's probably a combination because the, what do you call it? Wood has some give to it that metal doesn't. And so it's actually in some, what I've been reading is like the wood will splinter and stuff. If like you, let's say you hit it with a, like a mace, whereas like a fully wooden shield or a metal shield would transmit that shock right to you.
Okay. Okay. So
you know what I mean? Yeah, it's kind of, yeah. Sure. You know what I'm saying? Like the,
yeah. Cap shield when, Thor hits it. Right. Sure.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever like, hit it like a metal baseball bat against a post, like a metal post, but I'm an idiot and I've done that.
Sure.
And yeah, the energy just reverbs right back into your hands. It's horrendous. Yeah. You know, I mean, all that energy has to go somewhere. With the wood, what happens is the wood gives, with the metal shield, that all gets transmitted to you. So there's times where, you know, you don't want the metal on metal contact.
Sure.
That's the whole point. So they brought each other down, but they both leapt up and came straight at each other, fighting with swords for a long while. And it was an even battle. I could tell you a good deal about it if I wished. And this is the author speaking, the narrator, right? But I'll not spend my efforts on that.
God damn you. God, you've done this too many times in your story. You have failed to describe a landscape properly. You can't steal a bitch and fight away from me again. You had me with that montage earlier, dog. You had me. That was sick. Now we're just going to yada, yada, yada through. All right, go. Let's go for it. Let's get the boy winning.
Yeah, you know, I can't think of any modern movie that would do this.
I made the Predator reference.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's right, yeah. that's right. So I guess they still
I think
do this.
That was I think that was more for budgetary reasons. Yeah, I think honestly, I get it in a movie when it's like, well, it's going to cost Godzilla goes underwater to fight this thing. Yeah, we ran out of money, my guys. I don't know what to tell you, but you can just use words. Words are free.
They sure are. Yeah.
You can just go nuts with them. Go nuts. And instead, we're just going to yada, yada, yada. Anyway.
One word is worth as much as 20.
No, it really isn't, my dude. I hate to say it.
In the end, Clamadius, against his will, had to cry for mercy.
It would have been cool to have figured out how that happened, but
but he swore most earnestly, as his seneschal had done, and seneschal again was keeper of a household.
Yeah, yeah.
That on no condition would he submit to imprisonment in Beaurepaire, which is where the knight, the friend Gorman de Gorhart.
Yes. The friendly guy who gave him whatever he wanted.
Exactly. Any more than his seneschal would. Nor for all the Roman Empire would he go to the nobleman who owned the fine castle. There's the Gorm on the Gorm. I think she is the Fleur de Blanche of Beaurepaire. Beaurepaire, by the way, is a number of places in France. It still exists. So it's probably closer to Auxerre, if I was looking at that right. But there's quite a few of them. Anyway.
Okay. Great.
Let's see. It also is just making it very grounded in France. You know, that's, you know, if you want some geography, like Chrétien de Troyes is probably name dropping cities that are, you know, either famous or known to him. Yeah.
I would rather have a detailed description of a castle, yep. An individual castle, but sure. Great.
Sure. Nor for all the Roman Empire would he go to the nobleman who owned the fine castle.
Okay. Right. Okay.
So, sorry, I had mentioned that line already, but I wanted to point out the Roman Empire because a lot of people put the King Arthur stories in the days of the Roman Empire, and that's like antiquity for them.
Okay.
But like in the Middle Ages, that happened a while ago.
Sure.
And that's like when King Arthur is. That's why some modern iterations will make him a Roman soldier.
Okay.
But like makes it to England and finds Excalibur. He's, you know, is like a soldier of or born of a Roman connection, something like that. But, you know, the Romans were there till about the 5th century, about the earlier part, 430-ish. So, you know, that's they withdraw shortly after that. And a lot of people say that's when the Middle Ages start in England.
Okay, so that's like the start to that race, sure.
Yep, exactly. That's what we consider Middle Ages, and things are defined by a lot of movement, really, you know, and change in the area without a lot of stability, really.
Sure.
Yeah. But he willingly promised to yield himself prisoner to King Arthur and to give his message to the girl whom Kay had struck so basely. So remember,
again, yeah, this is a second time. I mean, I don't hate this. This is nice. He's like looking out for homegirl. All right.
Yeah, that he longed to avenge her, whoever it might grieve or trouble, if God gave him strength. Then the boy made him swear that before dawn the next day, all those held captive in his dungeons would be set free, safe and sound. And that as long as he lived, if ever there were an army besieging the castle, he would drive them off if he could, and that the girl would never again be troubled either by him or by his men. And so Clamadius returned to his land. And when he arrived, he commanded that all his captives be released from prison and said they could go their ways now, completely free. As soon as he had given word, his bidding was done. Out came the prisoners, freed from the dungeons, and they set off immediately with all their belongings, for nothing was kept from them.
Hey, good. It's, I guess, the way the penal system should work. once again, the boy gets everything he wanted. At least he had to kind of fight for it. I mean,
a little, yeah.
Yeah.
Clamadius set out on a different path, traveling all alone. It was the custom as the at this time, as we find written in the book. And the book that he's referencing is his own book in the prologue.
Right? Okay, good.
The book that allegedly this was taken from, right?
Sure, sure.
So that any knight had to yield himself prisoner, dressed just as he was when he left combat, just as he was when he was vanquished, without removing or donning anything. Thus attired, Clamadius set off after Anguilleron, who was heading for Disnadaron, where the king was to hold court. I looked for this one. It's just a place where King Arthur has court. We're going to see a couple of these. There's these places that when I try to look them up, various sources, they all point back to this text as being the origin. Okay. So these are just Arthurian places. They appear to be somewhat mystical. Maybe they were famous and we lost track of them. I don't know, you know, but it's just kind of lost in there. So there's a couple where I'm just going to make that note and move on. This is one of them. Meanwhile, there was great jubilation in the castle where those who had spent so long in foul captivity had now returned. The hall and the knight's lodging rang with rejoicing, and in the chapels and churches, all the bells pealed with joy. Every monk and nun sent thanks to God, while through the streets and squires, all the men and women danced their round. How the castle celebrated, now that no one was besieging them or waging war. And meanwhile, Anguilleron rode on, and Clamadius followed him. And three nights in a row, he lodged at the house where Anguilleron had lodged. He followed him, lodging by lodging, to Disnadaron in Wales, where King Arthur was holding a packed court in his halls.
Okay, so Anguilleron is traveling, and Clamadius is like stalking him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because so they both lost, and they both sweared to be...
Right. Yep. So they're both going to send the same message to homegirl and give themselves up to King Arthur. All right.
Yeah. They, meaning King Arthur's court, saw Clamadius coming, armed as custom required, and he was recognized by Anguilleron, who had already given the boy's message to the court on his arrival the night before, and had been retained for the king's household and council. So again, retain like a retainer. He's now working for this guy, right?
Yeah.
For Arthur.
So this is two for two. I mean, that's a pretty good track record for the boy. The Red Knight. Ooh.
100. He, which is Anguilleron, now saw his lord, Clamadius, covered in crimson blood, but did not fail to recognize him. He said at once, my lords, behold a wonder. Believe me, the boy with the red arms has sent this knight here. He's vanquished him, I'm sure of it, for he's covered in blood. I know that blood well, and the man himself, for he's my lord, and I'm his vassal. Clamadius of the Isles is his name, and I thought there was no finer knight in the Empire of Rome, but misfortune befalls even worthy men.
Dang. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So he's like, you know, this is not us. So said Anguilleron, and then Clamadius arrived, and they ran to meet each other in the middle of the court. It was Pentecost, which is a religious celebration.
Yeah, Pentecostal, right?
Exactly. That's, yeah. You got it. And the queen was sitting beside King Arthur at the head of the table. And there were a good many counts and kings, dukes and queens and countesses. All the masses had been sung, and the ladies and knights had returned from church. Kay came walking through the hall. Remember, this is the guy that's kind of the asshole.
Yeah, of course. Yep. He's the guy who was slapped homegirl when she didn't even... no one ever has it coming, but you know what I mean.
Yep.
Unjustly struck a lady.
Yeah. So Kay came walking through the hall without a coat or mantle, holding a stick in his right hand and wearing a hat of rich cloth upon his fair-haired head. So he's a blondie. There was not a more handsome knight in all the world.
The Red Knight's going to have some trouble with that, because I'm almost certain he was called the most handsome knight in all the world, but
I believe he was too. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I'm is interesting. Yeah. Certain. Yep. A lot of handsome knights out there.
Apparently.
A lot of quality boys.
Yeah. Not just a handsome knight. The most handsome knight. Mm-hmm. And his hair was plaited in a braid, but his beauty and his prowess were spoiled by his wicked mocking. His tunic was of a rich cloth colored with a fine deep dye, and it was girdled with a finely worked belt of which the buckle and all the links were gold.
See, you could use this level of description with your combat. See what you're doing here with the way he's dressed?
Yeah,
this is good. This is conveying, this is painting a mental picture. When you're doing the whole big action scene, some added descriptors would be helpful.
The author says, or narrator here, I can say that with confidence, for so the source book testifies. So they went out of their way to describe his drip. Everyone stepped out of his path as he strode through the middle of the hall, avoiding him for fear of his wicked jests and his evil tongue. Any wise man fears open spitefulness, whether it be in seriousness or jest. Come on.
Yeah, no kidding.
Comics wouldn't have a job, dude. What would we do? But then again, comics are terrible people, so let's move on. All those present... We love comics. All those present greatly feared his base mockery, and no one said a word to him. In view of them all, Kay stepped up to where the king was sitting and asked, "If you wish, sir, you can eat at once." So I think here he's saying, like, don't wait for anybody. You know, you're the king. Just eat, right?
Sure.
"Hey," said the king, "leave me in peace. Never by the eyes in my head will I eat on so great a feast day when I hold so full a court until some news arrives here." So I'm not really sure why he's waiting. I guess he's waiting on some news. I don't know what news. It was while they were talking thus that Clematius entered the court to yield. Maybe they're waiting on the news of the boy. I think that's what I thought in my first read through. So we'll see. I'm still not landed on it. It was while they were talking thus that Clematius entered the court to yield himself a prisoner, armed as custom demanded. And he said, "God save and bless the finest king alive, the most generous and most noble. Such is the testimony of all who have heard of his great deeds. Now hear me, good sire," he said, "for I have a message to give. Much as it grieves me, I acknowledge that I'm sent here by a knight who has defeated me. I have yet to yield myself prisoner to you on his behalf, whether I like it or not, or I have to yield myself prisoner to you."
Okay.
"If anyone asked me if I knew the knight's name, I would have to say no."
Because no one does. No one knows his name. We've omitted the part where he's even a person. This story hasn't really he's a wild boy who in less than a week has become one of the most powerful knights in Rome, England, France. It's hard to say.
"But I can tell you that he carries red arms, and he said that you gave them to him." "God guide you, friend," said the king. "Tell me truly, is he in good health and spirits?" "You may be sure he is, my good dear sire," said Clematius. "He's the most valiant knight I've ever known. And he told me to speak to the girl who laughed at him, which made Kay behave so shamefully as to strike her. He says he'll avenge her if God grants him the power."
We're really building up Kay to be the actual big bad of this story, which pretty cool. He not a terrible plot line, but a lot of animosity coming Kay's way.
Yeah, absolutely, right? Yeah, they don't mocking people is just seen as real bad stuff, I guess.
Yeah.
"The court fool," remember the jester, "when he heard these words, jumped for joy and cried, 'God bless me, my lord king, that blow will indeed be avenged without a word of a lie, for Kay will dislocate his shoulder and break his arm. There's nothing he can do to stop it.'"
What a specific thought. Like, what an exact, like, now it has
prophecy?
To
prophecy. Yeah,
yeah. It is a prophecy, 100%. Yeah.
Kay heard this and thought it the most insulting foolishness. "You may be sure that it was not cowardice that stopped him beating the fool about the head, but the presence of the king and the risk of shame."
The worst punishment of all,
I guess. "The king shook his head and said to Kay, 'It grieves me deeply that he isn't here with me. It was you and your foolish tongue that made him go, and it saddens me.' Then Giflet rose at the king's command, along with Sir Ivaine."
Okay.
Oh, remember him?
Other knights of the round table.
Exactly. Okay. "Who improved all those who shared his company. And the king told them to take Clematius and lead him to the chambers where the queen's maids were playing. Clamadius bowed to them, and the knights commanded by the king led him to the chambers and pointed out the girl to him. And he told her the news that she so wished to hear, for she still grieved for the shame that rested on her cheek. She had quite recovered from the blow, but she had not forgotten or forgiven the shame. And a man does ill to forget a shame or injury done to him. The pain passes, but the shame remains in a staunch and vigorous man. Only in a man of little worth does it cool and die away. They're saying if you get struck and you just let it go, you're a man of little worth.
Yeah, you're a bitch. You're a bitch.
Yeah.
It's funny that that's been just a part of our culture since even then. You know, you can't, you can't let shit like that fly. So, okay.
Yeah, but it directly also, to me, is really interesting because it is directly opposed to the whole Jesus, like, turn the other cheek, nonviolence kind of thing, you know?
Hypocrisy? There's hypocrisy happening here?
But what I guess I'm pointing out to you largely is this meant to be hypocritical on purpose? To show that, right? Like,
I don't know. Yeah. You're the medievalist. You tell me.
That's one of those points that I think is an open question in medieval study that is frustrating.
Sure. One of those subjective bits that I'm sure you and council people argue about.
No, there's hard arguments on how these things are read and what, you know, whether they are critiques, whether that was a thing that people were into, you know, like this sarcastic doublespeak, criticisms of the knighthood. You know, this one's kind of coming in early for humanism, but Crutching and Detroit might be just pointing at some themes that people are into because there is a lot of critiquing, you know, of the time. Maybe not, you know, that's to get, you know, that's like the book club version of it, right?
Sure, we're trying
to kind of thresh out the deeper meaning of this. Because, yeah, they're batshit insane stories, but even the yada, yada, yadding the battles, it's conscious choice, right?
Sure. Like, yeah. Clearly. Yeah. Why do that?
You know, and is it to point out that, like, hey, look, I got you thirsty for blood. You know, that's not what's important here. You know, like, pay attention. Yeah. So, you know.
I mean, if he was doing it better, there are ways of telling that story, right? You can The Last of Us 2 it. Where you make a story that's kind of unpleasant because you're trying to point out the circle of violence, but that requires to entertain me as well as teach me that point. And he's kind of fucking up on the first part of that.
Well, yeah, because he's one of the first to even try it potentially, you know, but we don't know.
He could have done better.
No, if he had done better, it wouldn't be such a contentious point.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah. Because we do have stories where they point out the cracking of bones and the spilling of blood and the entrails and all that good stuff, you know. Meanwhile, the one who had fought him for the land and for the beautiful girl Blanchefleur, his love, was now taking his pleasure and ease beside her. The land would now have been his. So now we're back to our friend, right?
Yeah. Entirely. The Red Knight.
Yep. There you go. That's great. Entirely and undisputed, had his heart not been elsewhere, but he was thinking more of someone else, for his heart was fixed on his mother, whom he had seen faint and fall, and he longed more than anything else to go and see her. He did not dare to ask leave of his love, for she refused and forbade it, and commanded all her people to beg him to stay, but all her pleas were vain, except that he made them a promise. If he found his mother alive, he would bring her back with him.
And would she be dead? It's been like a week. It hasn't been that long. What would have happened to her?
Yeah. And from that day forward would be lord of the land. They had his word to that. And if she were dead, he would return likewise.
He is setting himself up.
If you remember, she collapsed right after he left.
Oh,
right?
Too true. So he's like thinking she died of grief?
I don't know. Yeah. The whole thing's insane.
Yeah.
And so he set out, promising to return, leaving his beautiful love filled with anguish and sorrow, as was everyone else. There was such a procession as he rode from the town that it was like Ascension Day or a Sunday, for all the monks were there, dressed in their copes of rich silk, and all the nuns in their veils, because that's what we know monks for, is being dressed in their copes of rich silk.
Yep.
And they all said, "Sir, you saved us from exile and restored us to our homes. It's no wonder that we grieve when you mean to leave us so soon. Our sorrow is bound to be great, and it couldn't even be more so." And he said to them, "There is no need to cry anymore. With God's guidance, I'll return. And what's the use of weeping? Don't you think it's right that I should go and see my mother, whom I've left on her own in the wood called the Waste Forest?" I thought it was a lonely forest earlier. But...
yeah, right. But now it's the Forest of Waste.
I guess,
it's full of a bunch of microplastics. And it's there's like, you know, used condoms on the ground. It's kind of wasteland. You don't want to find... kids go there to do drugs. Don't hang out there.
Most parks in Los Angeles, by the way.
Yeah, there you go. Yep.
"I'll come back, whether it's her wish or not. I shan't fail to, not for all the world. If she's alive, I'll have her take the veil as a nun in your church. And if she's dead, I'll have a service for her soul each year, that God may place her with the pious souls in Abraham's bosom. Worthy monks, and you, good ladies, this should be no cause for grief, for I'll endow you richly for her soul's sake, if God leads me back."
You know, the boy's tone, all this battle has really gone to his head. Talking quite a bit different than he was just a page ago.
Yeah, he really, and that's, again, a purposeful change in tone here from a lovable idiot to somehow this guy has a lot of direction and chutzpah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. "At that, the monks and nuns and everyone turned back, and he set out, his lance in its rest, fully armed, just as he had come. All day long he rode on, meeting no earthly being, neither Christian man nor Christian woman."
we won't mention any of the rest of them. The rest of them just don't count.
"Who could guide him on his way? He prayed constantly to God, the Sovereign Father, to grant that he might find his mother full of life and health, if it were his will. He was still praying when he caught sight of a river flowing down a hill."
I wonder how many crossbow lengths that river was.
Nice. They don't tell us. "He saw that the water was swift and deep and did not dare to ride in. And he said, 'Oh, almighty Lord, if only I could cross this river, I think I'd find my mother on the other side if she's still alive.' He rode along the bank until he came near a rock, and the river washed all around it so that he could go no further." And here I think, you know, when I first read a rock, I was like, you know, a rock the size of my palm. I think it's like a boulder, right?
Yeah, sure, yeah. Sure.
Because the river is literally going around it.
Yeah.
But suddenly he noticed a boat with two men on board sailing downstream. He drew rein and waited, thinking that they would sail on down to him. But they stopped and stayed dead still in midstream, most securely anchored. The one in the bow was fishing with a line, baiting his hook with a little fish slightly bigger than a minnow.
Okay. How big's a minnow?
I'm so glad you asked.
The educator in you is coming out and the idiot in me is coming out. So
yeah, so this one is just a line that's taken from a National Geographic, it looks like, but the Eurasian European or common minnow is one of the smallest species of fish found in UK waters and is commonly 6 to 10 centimeters in length and weighs under 20 grams.
Okay, so real small. 2 inches?
Yeah, 2.2 centimeters to the inch. Between roughly 3 to 5 inches.
Okay. Sure.
And this
one
says it's even smaller than a minnow. So
yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah, so it's a tiny little feeder fish.
It is very much so. Yeah. So there you go. Let's see. Sorry. "The boy, not knowing what to do or where to find a crossing, hailed them and asked, 'Tell me, my lords, is there a bridge across this river?' And the one who was fishing replied, 'No, indeed, brother, by my faith. Nor is there any boat, I think, bigger than the one we're in, which wouldn't carry 5 men. You can't cross on horseback for 20 leagues upstream or down, for there's no ferry or bridge or ford.'" Ford's an interesting... You know what ford is? Kind of interesting. Sorry.
Hit me. Yeah.
I'll make it quick, but from Cambridge Dictionary, an area in a river or stream that is not deep and can be crossed on foot or in a vehicle or horse can be man-made or natural occurring.
Okay, sure.
It's kind of like an
Oregon Trail when you would say, I'm going to ford a river.
Try
to find an area that looks shallow enough that
your
horse and shit. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and typically they would have a lead horse try it first and, see what happens, right?
Cool.
The Red Knight said, "Then tell me in God's name," he said, "where I can find lodging." And the man replied, "You've need of that and more besides, I'd say. I'll give you lodging tonight, right up through the cleft in that rock. And when you come to the top, you'll see a house in a valley ahead of you. That's where I live, with river and woods close by." So he made his way up the rock. But when he reached the top, he looked all around him and saw nothing but earth and sky and said, "What was the point of coming up here? Just a wild goose chase. God bring shame on the fool who sent me here. What a fine guide he was, saying I'd find a house when I reached the top. Oh, fisherman, that was a most unworthy deed if you said it to do me harm."
Now, the term, I figured the term wild goose chase was a lot newer. That's nuts that I could go back to this
thousand years
and say, "Oh, they're putting me on a wild goose chase," and people would be like, what I'm talking about. Nuts. Wow, history is fascinating.
That fucking goose
been eluding us for years.
But suddenly, in a valley nearby, the top of a tower caught his eye. "From here to Beirut, you would not have found one more handsome or more finely placed."
Wow, what a very distinct geographic location to have picked. Yep. Cool.
It really jumped out to me. So I had to do a little digging, as you know, because I was like, how common was Beirut known to people here? But remember what I told you, Troyes is a special place in France because it is the intersection of so many trade routes.
Sure.
The Crusades are a thing
at
this point.
Sure.
And so
which one?
From Wikipedia, as a trading center of the Eastern Mediterranean, Beirut was important as Acre, which is modern day Israel. It's a city in there. During the Middle Ages, from 1110 to 1291, during which place this is written, the town and lordship of Beirut was part of the Kingdom of Jerusalem.
Okay. Wow.
There's going to be some players here that I'm going to say that are worthy of their own attention, so we're not going to spend too much time on them, but I'll say there's some heavy hitters here. The city was taken by Saladin in 1187.
That's at least a name I've heard.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that guy is a badass. Okay. I'll just say that, man. And probably a total bastard, too. But, none of these people.
Everyone before 1992 was probably an asshole. Yeah, yep. Sure.
So that's the Muslim side kind of capturing that city, right? And then it was recaptured in 1197, so about 10 years later, by Henry I of Brabant as part of the German Crusade of 1197.
Okay.
John of Ibelin, known as the Old Lord of Beirut, was granted the lordship of the city in 1204. And this is like where I think Assassin's Creed takes place. I'd need a reference check for that. But
sure.
He rebuilt the city after the destruction by the Ayyubids and also built the House of Ibelin Palace in Beirut. My pronunciations are surely off. In 1291, Beirut was captured and the Crusades expelled by the Mamluk army of Sultan al-Sharaf Khalil, which ends it and it becomes Muslim until now.
Okay.
Yeah. So the point is... there would have been a lot of people familiar with that area.
With that area. Beirut's a notable feature of their like exotic world. Sure.
It's kind of like this. Are you aware of Fallujah?
Sure.
Yeah. When did you become aware of it?
Probably high school, probably because of a little conflict or two.
Exactly. you know, otherwise,
Sure, Fallujah would have never been on my map had there not been a lot of unchill stuff happening there.
Exactly. So here's the description of the tower that he sees. It was square and built of gray rock, flanked by two smaller towers. The hall stood before the tower and lodges before the hall. The boy rode down towards it, saying that the one who had sent him there had guided him well, and he praised the fisherman, no longer calling him treacherous or dishonest or untruthful, now that he had found a place to lodge. He headed towards the gate, and before the gate he found a drawbridge, and it was lowered. He rode in over the bridge, and four boys came to meet him. Two of them disarmed him, while the third led away his horse and gave it hay and oats. The fourth dressed him in a fresh and brand new mantle of scarlet cloth.
Okay.
Again, so more red.
He's really leaning into this red knight that he murdered a man and took it from. Cool. Yep. Mm-hmm. Cool, cool, cool.
When it says they disarmed him, that means they took off his armor, right?
Yeah, I assumed it was a sequence where four boys run up and like a pit crew take off his gear and shit. Sure.
And as you've seen by just my partial play at the Ren Fair,
yes,
quite a job. Yeah.
Those of you in the audience, I went with my brother to the Renaissance Fair where he wore, damn near full plate, and I had to squire for him near the porta potties so that he could actually go to the bathroom because of how inconvenient wearing a big mesh of steel is.
Yeah, it turns out it's a lot. You know,
yeah, out you need four boys to disrobe.
Exactly. Yeah. If not, that's, that armor must be something to smell. Then they led him to the lodges. And I tell you, a man could have searched as far as Limoges without finding any so handsome. Or Limoges, I forget how that's spelled. I think for that one, that's another one. This one, roughly the middle towards the southwest of France. Limoges, city capital of Haute-Vienne Département and of the Nouvelle-Aquitaine region, of southeastern France. So this is close to Paris on the right bank of the Vienne River. During the Middle Ages, this was a large city strongly marked by the cultural influence of the Abbey of Saint-Martial, where the Dukes of Aquitaine were invested and crowned. That one's important. They're like, really hoity-toity people.
Sure.
So again, just kind of saying like, also centering us, right? Like it's really just name dropping cities.
Sure.
You know, like, oh, you know, these places, they're close to you.
Yeah. The exotic places to make the story feel bigger. Sure.
Yes.
Sure.
The boy stayed in the lodges until two servants were sent to summon him to the Lord. He returned with them to the hall, which was square, being as long as it was wide. In the middle of the hall.
I'm sorry. For the man who one word is as good as 20. Oh boy, you're describing stuff I wouldn't have cared to have known. But all right, go on. It's square and great. Yep. I've got, honestly, I'm so distracted by this description that I now have lost the description entirely. But great.
It's a square, which is the funniest part. Yeah. In the middle of the hall, he saw, sitting in a bed, a most handsome nobleman with graying hair. On his head, he wore a hat of sable, berry black, covered in a deep, rich cloth on top, and his whole gown was the same. He was leaning on his elbow, and before him was a huge fire of seasoned logs, blazing brightly, surrounded by four columns. 400 men could easily have sat around that fire, and each would have had an excellent place.
Wow. But, okay. Yeah. So big fire indoors.
Yeah, I guess. The description runs away from me too. At a certain point, I'm like, wait, what is this? The columns were very strong, supporting a tall, wide chimney of heavy bronze. The two servants led the boy forward, one at each elbow, and brought him before their Lord. When the Lord saw him coming, he greeted him at once and said, "My friend, forgive me if I don't get up to meet you, for I'm unable." "In God's name, sir," said the boy, "don't mention it. God gave me joy and health. It doesn't bother me at all." But for the sake of his guests, the worthy man struggled up as much as he could and said, "Come here, friend. Don't be afraid of me. Sit down here beside me. You're quite safe. I command you." So the boy sat down at his side, and the nobleman asked him, Where have you come from today, my friend? Sir, he said, I rode this morning from Bon Repair. That was its name. So help me God, said the nobleman. You've traveled a very long way today. You must have left before the watch blew the dawn signal. No, indeed. Yeah.
The watch blew the dog signal?
Dawn.
Dawn signal. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And then
so like the city watch. Okay. Okay.
You'll see the next line has some stuff. Yeah. So no, indeed, said the boy. The first hour had already been sounded. I promise you. So first hour would have been about 6 a.m. The dawn signal would have been when the sun is rising. Right. But before that, remember, time is kind of new at this point. We'll talk about it later because time is a weird thing.
Time is a weird thing.
Yeah. Most people, the only concept of time they had was when church bells rang. I'll say that. Mm. While they were talking thus, a boy came in at the door. He was carrying a sword hung around his neck and presented it to the nobleman. Nobleman drew it half out of its scabbard, and from letters written on the blade, he saw where it was made and read that it was of such fine steel that there was only one way it could ever be broken, known only to the one who had forged and tempered it.
Whoa! So he's got a magic sword and we're just finding this out now?
Well, this is the guy he's visiting.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay.
And a boy brought it to him. Yeah.
I understand. Okay. Yeah. So he's about to get his sword upgrade.
Oh. Okay.
Gotcha. This guy's got a sword that is the fucking, it's made out of the ring. The Lord of the Rings ring. It can only be forged and destroyed in one fucking place. That's rad. I'm glad he's getting an upgrade. Let's go.
So the boy who had brought it to the nobleman said, sir, the beautiful haired girl, your niece, has sent you this gift. You never saw a finer sword as long and as broad as this. You may give it to whoever you wish, but wherever But wherever it's bestowed, my lady dearly hopes that it will be put to good use. The one who forged the sword has only ever made three, and he's about to die, so this is the last he'll ever make.
What a specific... Oh, man. If the other two swords don't enter this plot line, I'm going to be real mad. Because you can't set up stakes like that. And I'm not going to lie, I hope the knight he has to fight has the other two.
Oh, and man. Yeah.
Fucking, you know, Darth Maul's it, yeah, right?
Totally. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Can't wait. Can't wait.
And straight away, the Lord presented the sword to his guest.
I mean, nothing. Ah, okay. Sure.
With
the
belt.
I love it. It's dangerous out there. You may need this. Yep. Cool.
With a belt, which itself was worth a fortune.
Yeah.
Just give him everything. Sure. Yeah, went up. The sword's pommel was made of the finest gold of Arabia or Greece, and the scabbard was of a golden thread from Venice. With all its rich decoration, the Lord presented it to the boy and said, good brother, this sword was intended and destined for you, and I very much want you to have it. Come, gird it on and draw it. The boy thanked him and girded it on so that it was not restricting, and then drew it naked from the scabbard. And after gazing at it for a while, he slid it back into the sheath. And truly, it sat splendidly at his side and even better in his hand. And it seemed indeed that in time of need, he would wield it like a man of valor. Behind him.
I was half expecting him to, just because of how many RPGs I play, I thought he was just going to butcher the old man, right? I thought he was going to be like, well, I'm okay doing an evil run right now. I've got a fucking sweet magic sword. But no, he just swings it around, puts it back in its scabbard. Cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Does a flourish or two.
Should have hit F5 quick save and then just wipe out the town.
Yeah. Just to see what happens.
Behind him, he saw a group of boys standing by the brightly burning fire. He noticed the one who was looking after his arms and entrusted the sword to him. Then he sat down again on the bed beside the Lord, who treated him with the greatest honor. And no house lit by candles could ever provide a brighter light than there was in that hall.
I really hope this gets sexy. I hope this takes a fucking turn. Oh, man. Go on. We're all waiting for it.
While they were talking of one thing and another, a boy came from a chamber clutching a white lance by the middle of the shaft, and he passed between the fire and the two who were sitting on the bed. Everyone in the hall saw the white lance with its white head, and a drop of blood issued from the tip of the lance's head, and right down to the boy's hand, this red drop ran.
Wow. Yeah. This is becoming a curse of some sort, but go on.
Yeah. The Lord's guest gazed at this marvel that had appeared there that night, but restrained himself from asking how it came to be, because he remembered the advice of the nobleman who had made him a knight, who had instructed him to be aware of talking too much. He feared.
He's finally showing that he's learned a lesson or two. Okay.
Yeah. He feared it would be considered offensive if he asked, so he did not. Just then, two other boys appeared, and in their hands, they held candlesticks of the finest gold inlaid with black enamel. So black and gold candles, dude. Metal. Sick.
Yeah. Witchcraft shit. Yeah.
The boys who carried the candlesticks were handsome indeed, and in each candlestick burned 10 candles at the very least.
Okay. Great. Paints a mental image that's hard for me to create, but great.
Yep. A girl who came in with the boys, fair and comely and beautifully adorned, was holding a grail between her hands.
Here we are. Here we go. We got here. It took 3 episodes, fucking 5 hours or some shit, and we finally met the goddamn grail. I got a feeling this is a holy grail. I've got a feeling this grail can fucking... I didn't expect it to just be handed to him. I thought there was going to be like, you know, some buzz saws and some other like weird traps and a weird night that ages you to death if you drink from the wrong one. But great, we got the grail.
When she entered holding the grail, so brilliant a light appeared that the candles lost their brightness like the stars or the moon when the sun rises.
Wow, so it's like legit magic. It's like altering its environment. Sick.
After her came another girl holding a silver trencher. Less impressive because you have no idea what the fuck that
what's
is.
What's a trencher?
Right. That's the funny part to me is how these things are supposed to be energized. Maybe, I don't know, but I had to look it up as well, my friend. Britannica says, trencher, originally a thick slice of bread used as a primitive form of plate for eating and for slicing meat. Now,
so it's like a dish you hold stuff on, or
exactly. And so by the 14th century, it says, which would have been actually after this, but century, a square or circular wooden plate of rough workmanship. So I think that the idea though is that it's a silver thing for eating on.
Right? Yeah, it's sure. Like, yeah. Sure. Cool. A silver plate. Yeah.
The grail, which went ahead, was made of fine, pure gold. And in it were set precious stones of many kinds, the richest and most precious in the earth or the sea.
Those bejeweled. Uh-huh. This grail is so nice, it's bejeweled. All right. Yep.
Those in the grail surpassed all other jewels without a doubt. They passed before the bed as the lance had done and disappeared into another chamber. The boy saw them pass, but did not dare to ask who was served from the grail, for he had taken the words of the wise nobleman to heart.
Okay.
This is the narrator speaking now. I fear he may suffer for doing so, for I've heard it said that in time of need, a man can talk too little as well as too much. I don't know if it will bring him good or ill, but he asked nothing.
Okay. Wow. So the boy has finally learned something. He has finally developed and advanced his character in a meaningful way. Mm-hmm. And in so doing, just to paint the scene to make sure I am envisioning what is happening. The boy has his magic sword he was just handed by an old man in a bed. He's sitting on a bed. He's suddenly become shy for the first time in this entire story, not asking men, what is that? What is that? What is that? And at the moment he has any semblance of self-awareness is the exact moment that a child runs, several children run through the room with the lance with a single drop of blood on it.
Yeah.
A magnificent grail, a thing that changes the color of the environment around it, and a really dope silver plate. And we're supposed to learn from this that sometimes it's good to talk too much. Okay, great. Great. Yeah.
Great. The lesson is you're wrong. The Lord commanded the boys to bring them water and to lay the cloths. Those whose job it usually was did as they were bidden, and the Lord and the boy washed their hands in warm water. Two boys brought in a wide table of ivory. According to my source book, it was all one solid piece.
What a weird thing for your source book to have included, but great, cool, yeah. Great.
I don't know how you would do that. Like a whole table made of ivory, a wide table with one piece. Doesn't ivory come from the elephants and stuff? Like it's like bones, essentially.
Yeah, but you're forgetting that they had giant creatures back then. Okay. There were giant creatures.
Forgetting that
giant elephants. And yeah.
That it's all untrue.
Lord of the Rings was a documentary, if you remember.
True. And they held it for a moment in front of their lord and his guests until two other boys came in with two trestles. You know, trestles, saw horses, those kind of things.
Sure, yeah, but, yeah. There's a lot of boys in this castle.
There is. It's troubling. Truly. Yeah. the wood of which the trestles were made had two fine qualities. It would never rot or burn, for it was ebony, which is proof against both, so the trestles would last forever. The table was set upon these trestles, and the cloth was laid. And what should I say about the cloth? No legate or cardinal or pope ever dined at one so white. Now, here we get some food. You ready for some food?
I'm hungry. Feed
it's interesting.
Me.
Yeah. And I want, yeah, I'm curious of your reaction. The first dish was a roast haunch of venison seasoned with hot pepper.
Okay. Nice. Yeah. Sounds tasty.
Yeah.
Probably definitely. Ethically sourced too.
Factory farming was not a thing yet.
Not a thing. So that was probably a field grown.
There was no shortage of clear, delicious wine to drink from golden cups.
Great. Clear wine. So,
yeah. Uh-huh. It's a white so wine just, party.
Yeah. I love it. Great. I hope some fish gets on the menu, because if they don't add it, tragic.
Before them, a page carved pieces from the peppered venison, drawing the haunch to him with the silver trencher, and he presented the pieces to them on a slice of perfectly baked bread.
Tasty. Sure. Nice. Yeah. That's probably a huge flex back then.
It's like a giant open-faced sandwich.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, the grail passed before them again, but the boy did not ask who was served from it. He refrained because of the nobleman's well-meant warning not to talk too much. He had taken it to heart and had it ever in mind. But he held his tongue more than he should have done, for as each dish
for
was
the
served,
first time in his entire life, he got this is the character growth we get. Great. Good.
For as each dish was served, he saw the grail pass before him, right before his eyes, and he did not know who was served from it, and he longed to know. But he said to himself that before he left, he would certainly ask one of the boys of the court, but would wait till the morning when he took his leave of the Lord and the rest of the household. And so he put it off till a later time and concentrated on eating and drinking.
I mean, they're kind of taunting him with it at this point, right? They're just like, here's this dope food. Also, look at this incredible cup. Look at this. Oh, man. But no, we're just going to move this in the background.
They were not mean with the wines and dishes, and they were delicious and most agreeable. Mean here, I think, means stingy.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I was going to ask. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. The food was fine and good. The worthy man and the boy were served that night with all the dishes befitting a king or a count or an emperor. And after they had dined, they stayed up together and talked while the boys prepared the beds and provided fruit tea. And there was fruit of the dearest kind, dates, figs, and nutmegs, and cloves, and pomegranates. And to finish, there were electuaries and digestives, including ginger from Alexandria, and Pliris Arconticum and Stomaticum.
So this is all like dessert.
Yeah, it seems like it. Yeah.
Bro, Coldstone would have blown their minds.
It would have totally blown their minds.
They wouldn't know what to do with it. Yes. Still, I like a good date. I don't think of it as a dessert food.
Yes, right. I guess it can be, chocolate dates.
Sure, candy. Sure.
You know, Fig Newton, kind of a snack. I don't know. Electuary, which came up, is according to Wikipedia here, medicine consisting of a powder or other ingredient mixed with something sweet, such as honey, to make it more palatable.
Okay. And
digestives is a food or medicine that aids or promotes the digestion of food.
Sure. Yeah. Makes sense. So they just had a bunch of meat and bread, and yeah, sure, they need to help it process.
Yeah, and then they have the Pliris Arconticum and Stomaticum. Those are, I couldn't find anything on them. I dug it around. There is a note in the book that these things, as they're included here, may be misprinted. But Stomaticum is like a Latin name for with stomach in there. So like something for the stomach, I imagine. It's probably the same thing with the other. But anyway. There were many different drinks to sample, sweet aromatic wine made with neither honey nor pepper, and old mulberry wine and clear syrup, which sounds gross, dude.
Yeah.
Just big tall glasses, clear syrup.
Well, they're into the clear liquids. A good clear liquid.
They do, you know, and given the British, that tracks. Yeah. Very plain taste. The boy, who had never tasted the like, was filled with wonder. Then the nobleman said, "Good friend, it's time to take our beds for the night. I'll go now, if you don't mind, and sleep there in my chambers. And whenever you wish, you can go to sleep in here. I have no strength in my body. I shall have to be carried." At that, four servants, strong and hearty, came from the chamber, and taking hold of the four corners of the blanket that was spread across the bed on which the nobleman was sitting, they carried him where they were told. Other boys stayed with his guest and served him and fulfilled his every need. When he wished, they took off his shoes and clothes and bedded him in sheets of fine white linen.
I mean, must be nice. Also interesting to see how they treat, like, their elderly, like, or at least the wealthy elderly, that he's getting some proper hospital treatment.
Yeah, they just lift him from the blanket. Where are we going, boss? I don't know. I feel like this is a game you play at camp, you know? He slept until the morning, when day had broken and the household had risen, but he could see no one as he looked about him, and he had to get up alone whether he liked it or not. Seeing that he had no choice, he did the best he could and put on his shoes without waiting for help. Then he went to don his arms again, finding that they had been brought and left at the head of a table. When he had fully armed, he headed for the doors of the chamber, which he had seen open the night before. But the move was fruitless, for he found them shut tight. He called and pounded and barged a great deal. Nobody opened up for him or said a word. After calling for quite a while, he turned back to the door of the hall. He found it open and went down the steps to find his horse saddled and saw his lance and shield against a wall. He mounted and went looking everywhere, but did not find a living soul and could not see a squire or boy.
Oh man, I think he got like one night standard, one night like
towered.
Yeah, night standard. Also take the hint, right? All your stuff's there for you. Just it might be time to mosey on.
I agree. You know, It seems like you've overstayed your welcome a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit, right?
So he came straight to the gate and found the drawbridge lowered. It had been left like that so that at whatever time he came to leave, nothing should stop him passing straight across. Seeing that the bridge was down, he thought the boys must all have gone into the woods to check their traps and snares. He had no wish to stay any longer and decided to go after them to see if any of them would tell him why the lance bled, if perhaps there was something wrong, and where the grail was carried. And so he rode out through the gate, but before he had got across the bridge, he felt his horse's hooves rise high into the air. The horse made a great leap, and if he had not jumped so well, both horse and rider would have been in sorry plight. The boy looked back to see what had happened and saw that the bridge had been raised. He called out, but no one replied. Hey,
dang,
he cried.
Dang, take a hint. He should have asked about that grail last night.
Ah, he should have. Yeah. Today he's all full of curiosity. Too late, buddy. Hey, he cried. Whoever raised the bridge, talk to me. Where are you? I can't see you. Come out and let me look at you. Something I want to ask. But he was wasting his time calling out like this, for nobody would answer him.
Bro, is it a haunted castle? Did he just have dinner with ghosts?
Oh, that would be such a cool story.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
And then the castle wasn't there at all.
Yeah, so I'm not going to tell you whether that happens or not, but we'll just plug right ahead. He headed towards the forest and came upon a path where he found fresh tracks where horses had passed. I think, he said, that the ones I'm looking for went this way. So he went galloping through the wood as far as the tracks led him until he chanced to see a girl beneath an oak tree weeping and crying and lamenting, filled with sorrow and misery.
Oh, that's a ghost for sure. Oh, man.
Alas, she cried, how unfortunate I am. I was born in an evil hour. Cursed be the hour I was conceived and the hour when I was born. Nothing has caused me such anguish before. Would to God my love were not dead in my arms. It would have been better by far if he had lived and I had died. Why did death, who has brought me such grief, take his soul rather than mine? What's my life worth when I see the one I most love lying dead? Truly, with him gone, I cared nothing for my life or my body. Come, death, and take my soul. Let it be the chambermaid and companion of his, if he'll accept it.
Okay.
So she's optimistic. She's doing good.
She's grieving.
A little bit. Such was the girl's lament for a knight she was holding, whose head had been severed. As soon as he saw her, the boy rode straight up to her. And as he drew near, he greeted her, and she greeted him, her head bowed, never ceasing to lament.
Her head or the head she's holding?
Good question. It'd be funny if it was both.
Both, right? Yeah.
Little slapstick into this. I mean,
the boy might be a little nervous, too, because he's had a pretty good track record of decapitating knights. So I wonder if he's like, this guy doesn't look familiar, but, I have decapitated a lot of people.
Yeah, it's definitely true. Even after being told not to, he's still, they're pretty fast and loose on that rule.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Young lady, he said, who killed this knight who's lying in your lap? Good sir, she replied, a knight killed him this very morning. Oops. But there's something that quite amazes me. God save me, you could ride, so they say, 40 leagues the way you've come, and you wouldn't find any good or honest or wholesome lodging. Yet your horse is well fed and his coat smooth. If he'd been washed and groomed and given a manger of oats and hay, he wouldn't have had a fuller belly or a sleeker coat. And it seems to me that you yourself had a comfortable and restful night.
You're telling me she's holding the head of her ex-person, partner, right, whatever. She's mourning to the point of wishing death upon her, but she looks up and she's like, that horse looks a little too well fed. You look a little too well rested, and you couldn't possibly have just made a camp for the night, brought food with you. No way. This is signs of you finding someone hospitable out in a non-hospitable zone. Cool, great, weird observation, but
yeah, I mean, It's interesting what she's choosing to focus on, but okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Little bit.
Truly, dear girl, he said, I had all the comforts possible last night, and if it shows, it's with good reason. But if you shouted loudly from where we are now, it would be heard quite clearly where I lodged last night. You don't know this country very well and haven't explored it at all, for without a doubt, I had the finest lodging I've ever had. Oh, sir, then you lodged at the house of the rich Fisher King.
Okay, sick. Okay, the rich Fisher King.
Yeah.
And he's a ghost.
By the savior, girl, I don't know if he's a fisherman or a king, but he's very wise and courteous. I don't know what more to tell you, except that I came across two men in a boat very late yesterday, sailing gently along. One of them was rowing. The other was fishing with a hook, and he told me the way to his house last night and gave me lodging. And the girl said, good sir, he is a king, I can assure you, but he was wounded in a battle and completely crippled, so that he's helpless now, for he was struck by a javelin through both his thighs.
Oh, shit. And yeah. Considering our guy's like history with javelins.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, bro. That might have been one of his like, you know, practice javelins that went a little far. He was never able to find it. Oh,
yeah. And here's where there's a bit of a anachronistic thought, right? Like the javelin was used a lot before armor.
Okay, right? Sure.
So, you know, think of your Roman days, your Greek days, that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, you could kill people with a javelin at that point, but this is where I think they're still, because they have inserted where it's Roman, you know.
Sure.
By the time, you know, the English longbows or, you know, the crossbows come out, nobody's using a javelin. You can carry like four javelin versus like 20 arrows, you know, like, what are we doing? Right. Like,
yeah.
So, but it is kind of interesting that they, you know, still hang on to the idea of a javelin, which is useless against most armor. So,
sure.
But when he wants to engage in some pleasure and sport, he has himself placed in a boat and goes fishing with a hook. That's why he's called the Fisher King. And he finds enjoyment that way because he couldn't manage any other sport. He can't hunt in the woods or along the riverbanks and marshes, but he has men to hunt the wildfowl and huntsmen and archers who go shooting with their bows in the forests. That's why he likes to live in this house just here, for in all the world, he could never find a retreat so suited to his needs. And he's had a house built befitting a rich king.
Sure, it almost sounds like a fucking castle. It has a drawbridge.
Yeah, it had everything, you know. So, yeah, but I don't know.
A house? Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely are not, as we've seen, great with the whole descriptions of places or people or things or time.
Yeah, sure. So, sure.
Yeah. By my faith, young lady, it's true what you say. I wondered at it when I came before him last night. I stood a little way from him, and he told me to come and sit beside him and not to take it for haughtiness if he didn't get up to greet me, for he didn't have the strength or power. So I went and sat at his side. Truly, he did you a great honor when he seated you at his side. And tell me now, as you sat beside him, did you see the lance whose point bleeds, though it has neither flesh nor veins? Did I see it? Yes, in faith. And did you ask why it bled? God help me, I didn't say a word. Then I tell you, you've done great wrong. And did you see the grail? Well, I saw it clearly.
Dang, so she's got, like, she knows that place forwards and backwards. Okay, okay.
Yeah, for saying there is nothing for 40 leagues or whatever.
Yeah,
liar.
That turns out there's a giant, like, yeah, ghost lair.
Fucking magic weapons and, you know, holy artifacts and interesting people that have backstories.
Also, this guy's kind of showing off his holy grail, right? It's so infamous that everyone knows about it.
Yeah. I saw it clearly. Who was holding it? A girl. Where did she come from? From a chamber. And where did she go? Into another chamber.
Great. This, I'm glad we don't have words for combat and sick battles, but we have words for this exchange. Cool. Fuck, man.
That's funny. Did anyone go ahead of the grail? Yes. Who? Two boys, that's all. What were they holding in their hands? Candlesticks full of candles. And who came after the grail? Another girl. What was she holding? A little silver trencher.
Did riveting. You ask? This is all just riveting.
It is like interviewing an idiot.
She's a toddler. I mean, it's two toddlers having a conversation. Yeah. Okay.
Did you ask them where they were going? Not a word crossed my lips. God help me, so much the worse. What's your name, friend? And the boy, who did not know his name, guessed.
What? I'm sorry. That's a huge drop. That's huge. You're telling me the boy is like a master swordsman trained by himself. He could chuck a javelin so accurately it could like blow out eyes. He's literally become a knight. He has gone up in social class, and we haven't been given a name because he doesn't know his own name. What the fuck was his mom calling him? They had like servants and shit, right? There were other people out there. What the hell were they calling him? Did he come from a place where there are no names? Or is this the writer being super lazy and realizing like, oh shit, I haven't given him a name? Is that like, as he was writing this, was he like, oh fuck, oh he doesn't know his name? Yes. Incredible that you are guessing your own name. He's like a patient with amnesia. Like,
totally. It's a bit like Memento. The boy, who did not know his name, guessed and said that his name was Percival the Welshman.
Okay. Percival the Welshman.
Not knowing if it were true. Now, also, this guy has met dozens of people, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and nobody wants.
Everyone has been inviting him in, giving him a bunch of shit. Here's a sword and cool. Here's a big old meal. Here's whatever the fuck you want. Your name. That means his wife hasn't asked him.
Right. Yeah. Presumably.
What is happening here?
Yeah.
Were names not just not that? No, everyone has a name and a title or some shit. Everyone does.
Yep.
So he's like, incredible.
Yep. So once again, said that his name was Percival the Welshman, not knowing if it were true or not, but it was true, though he did not know it.
Oh my God. That's it. Yeah. I can't. You're, oh man. So. He takes a random shot in the dark as to his own fucking name.
Yeah.
He just throws a dart at essentially a near limitless corkboard and nails it. Nails it. Oh, that is my, it just turns out that one guess I made, turns out that's actually my name.
And there's nobody left to verify this, you know, like who's going to?
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess his mom maybe, but yeah. Anyway. And when the girl heard this, she stood up before him and said bitterly, "Your name is changed, dear friend."
He just got it. So I don't think he's all that attached to it, considering he just guessed his own name.
Yeah. "To what?" he said. "Percival the Wretched. Oh, luckless Percival. How tragic that you failed to ask all this. You would have healed the good king who is crippled, and he would have regained the use of his limbs and the rule of his land, and you would have profited greatly. But know this now, many ills will beset both you and others. And know this too, this has befallen you because of the sin against your mother, for she has died of grief on your account."
Whoa, who is this lady? She suddenly knows his mom. She knows this weird like quest line that this guy was like, I guess, putting a grail, like just making it so obvious that if you asked about it, the fairy's curse would end and I'd be able to walk. What the rules of this world are so confusing, but go on. Okay, great. So he's He's done fucked up by not asking, by being, by his mind, too polite. Great.
Yeah, I guess. So the timing of these things is a lot, but anyway, it continues. I know you better than you know me. You don't know who I am, but I was brought up with you at your mother's house for a very long time.
This is all coming out right now? Why did you even ask the name? What?
I'm your cousin, and you are mine.
What are the chances? What are the fucking chances?
I don't didn't
recognize? Okay, go nope. on.
And they lived together for a long time, which actually is on par with, on brand for Percival here.
Yeah, sure. If that's oblivious. Even his, well, I guess we know it's his name because he guessed it correctly.
Yeah, at least we're able to talk about him instead of, you know, the nameless wanderer. Because I don't think he deserves that title. You know, he's not cool.
yeah, sure.
Yeah. And I grieve no less for your misfortune and not learning what was done with the Grail or where it's taken than for your mother who has died or for this knight whom I loved and adored because he called me his dear love and loved me like a noble, loyal knight. Oh, cousin, cried Percival, if what you told me is true, tell me how you know. I know it to be true, said the girl, for I saw her laid in the earth. May God in his goodness have mercy on her soul, said Percival. It's a cruel tale you've told me, and now that she's been buried, what would have been the use of going on? I was only going there because I wanted to see her. I have to take a different course. If you wanted to come with me, I'd be very glad, for the one who lies here dead will be of no service to you now, I promise you. The dead with the dead, the living with the living. Let's go together. It seems foolish to me to stay here on your own, watching over this body. Let's follow the one who killed him. And I promise and swear this, either he'll make me yield or I him if I can track him down.
Okay.
But she, unable to subdue the grief in her heart, replied, dear friend, I won't go with you at any price or leave him till I buried him. If you'll take my advice, you'll follow this paved road, for the cruel and wicked knight who killed my sweetheart went that way. But so help me God, I don't say that because I'd have you go after him, though I wish him as much ill as if it were me he'd killed. But where did you get that sword that hangs at your left side, which has never spilled a man's blood and has never had occasion to be drawn? I know very well where it was made, and I know very well who forged it.
Dude, this gal's a witch. Yeah. Like, she's just hanging out in the woods, mourning, then becomes a pivotal character related to our main character. Knows every detail about every armament on him. Like, I imagine the sword's still in its sheath. He's just swinging it around, but she's able to discern, well, that hasn't taken a life, which I think it has, right?
No, not this one. He has smited people with other, but he was given this one. It's like a magic sword guy. Yeah. It can only be broken in one specific way. The only person who knows how to do that is the person who made it.
That's right.
Only
that's
made
right.
Three swords in their life and is about to die. So a bit of a recap, but yeah.
Sure.
Beware, she says. Don't ever put your trust in it. It'll let you down. I promise you, when you find yourself in a great battle, for it'll fly into pieces. Dear cousin, it was sent to my good host last night by one of his nieces, and he gave it to me, and I consider it a fine present. But you worry me if what you've said is true. Tell me, if it came to be broken, do you know if it could be repaired? Yeah, so it was given to him by that niece. I think that's his wife now. Yeah. Could it be repaired, right? It could, but there'd be great hardship for whoever found his way to the lake below Kothatra. And so Kothatra is a castle in Arthurian legend. It's found in this text. This is where it comes from. So,
okay. So didn't actually exist, but
no, it's not a real place in this case. Sure. There you could have the sword beaten and tempered anew and made whole again if adventure led you there. Here's an interesting note, just because the editor puts it in here. The adventure here could mean chance, fortune, phenomenon. It was always a sign that God wanted you to go somewhere.
Okay.
So if you couldn't be on an adventure, if God didn't will it so. Right?
You know, I feel the same way about my adventures now.
Amazing. Yeah. And so they are ordained and, given. You must go to a smith named Triboé. And to him alone. Yeah, it's Triboé, maybe. But T-R-I-B-O-E-T, Triboé. And to him alone, for he made it and will remake it. And it will never be repaired by any other man. Make sure no one else tries his hand, for he would not succeed. Truly, said Percival, it would grieve me deeply if it broke. He set off then, and she stayed behind, not wanting to leave the body of the one whose death weighed so heavily on her heart.
Okay.
And Jan, that is where we're going to call it for this section.
Sure. We met probably the most important character to the story in that she is related to the main character and seems to know everything. I also like a side quest coming up, right? Like, just in case the sword breaks, you could go south of this fake place where they'll reforge it, but make sure you have enough experience points because...
Yeah, and don't try anybody else, which, given this guy, 100% he's going to try somebody else. So we'll see, but we definitely set up a side quest. We don't really have a main quest. I have no... Well, now maybe the Grail?
Sure.
So maybe. But she never said, like, go find the Grail. Could heal the Fisher King, right? So
if he had asked about it. What an interesting way to roll out a tale.
It took us 6 hours of reading just to get his fucking name.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Partially by mistake, it seems.
Oh, yeah. He just guessed at it. My name is... I don't know. And I had a cousin that lived with me that I forgot about.
Incredible.
Yeah. She's got to be a witch or something.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. Yeah.
Strong like Morgan totally strong Morgan Le Fay vibes. Anything you want to say on our outro, Jan?
I can't wait for next week. Those of you listening, keep up the good work. We'll be back.
This one's going live March 30th. Episode after that will be going live on what day is that? April 13th. We're keeping up our 2 week cadence. So thanks everybody. We'll have some social if you want. You can visit mymedievalmayhem.com. And that will have some extra info. I'm going to put links starting with this episode to all the notes that I made for this. So you can just see them under the link description. Anything else, Jim? Oh, I did want to. Sorry. Shout out again. This may take me a second to get, but it's really important that I do this, which is shout out our this book, which is now I can say it no problem, but it's Percival, The Story of the Grail from Chrétien de Troyes. Of course, we're not reading it in medieval French, so it's been translated by Nigel Bryant. It's a fantastic book. Pick it up on all this stuff. It looks like it's on Kindle.
So. I'm sure Mr. Bryant did a good job, but fantastic book? I don't. It's been fun having you read it.
It is a piece of history. So, with that, let's end it on this one. Have a fantastic rest of your whatever. See ya.